You're about to hear an inspiring message from the team at C3 Church Bathurst. It's our prayer that it will spur you to live your best life in Him.
Well, let's get into the message. Come with me to Mark 8. The short title of this message is Extending Grace. It's very dull and formal, isn't it? The one that I really want, that I knew that Steve wouldn't let me have because it was too long, is this: the hungry people, the Pharisees, the forgetful disciples, and what happened next. But, you know, it's been hard to say in one word. But that's where we're going. We're going to look at the hungry people, the Pharisees, the forgetful disciples, and what happened next. You ready? All right, let's have a look at Mark 8. I'm going to sort of zoom through the hungry people bit because people talk a lot about this, especially in Pentecostal churches, in the first part. And it talks about the miracle of feeding of the thousands, you know. And I'm just going to set the context by looking at this verse, really. It says in the book of Mark, in those days when there was again a large crowd and they had nothing to eat, Jesus was constantly followed by a large crowds of people. They're called the multitudes. It was a race of people. No, it wasn't. That was just, you know, the multitudes are here, the multitudes. There's just wherever Jesus went, the crowds followed him. He'd go out to the desert, the crowds would follow him. He'd cross a boat, he'd cross a river, he'd cross an ocean. The crowds would be there on the other side. They'd sneak around. I know where Jesus is going. Quick, let's run. We can cut him off. And then when he gets there, we go, surprise. They loved him. What was he doing? He was healing the sick. He was delivering people from demonic oppression. He was teaching them with authority. And they just couldn't believe this man, Jesus. So they'd follow him wherever he went. And in this case, they're out again, it says. Again, they had nothing to eat. And Jesus called his disciples and said to them, I feel compassion for the people because they have remained with me now 3 days and have nothing to eat. Can you imagine being so hungry for the teaching and for the works of God that you just forget to eat? I can't. Anybody? Imagine 3 days. Can you imagine being at Presence Conference for 3 days without eating? Still awesome. I love it. Can you imagine that? Like, we're so wrapped up in the worship of Jesus, so full of the teaching, so just loving seeing what Jesus is doing. Food just does not matter. That's what was going on. But don't you love, Jesus just doesn't go, well, you're full now, you're full of my word because that's food. Now off you go. No, he understands that people actually need to eat. It is a good thing. It is okay. Don't be so spiritual that you don't eat forever. And he says, if I send them away hungry to their homes, they will faint on the way and some of them have come from a long distance. Don't you love Jesus' heart? He knows his people. He knows that this person's come from the other side of the lake and that person's come from the mountain over there. He actually knows where they come from. And he cares about their journey home. And he says, if I send them away now, they're not going to make it home. They've been here for 3 days. They're weak. And so he says, his disciples answered him, his friends, where will anyone be able to find enough bread? Don't you love the disciples? They just bring Jesus back to earth. They just kind of ground him. Actually, Jesus, just let me point out this fact. Jesus, Jesus, there's no shops here. Jesus, and even if there were shops here, a bit short this week. We're talking thousands, tens of thousands of dollars just to feed these. Don't you need people just to remind you a bit of reality around you? Not. He was asking them, how many loaves do you have? And they said, 7. And he directed the people to sit down on the ground and taking the 7 loaves, he gave thanks. This month has been about gratitude. It's been about looking at why we give thanks to God in all circumstances, regardless of what's going on. And here we see Jesus. He hasn't done the miracle yet. He's just said to the people around, he's got his 7 loaves. And the first thing he does is he thanks. Who does he thank, actually? Like, he's God. That's interesting, isn't it? He goes, thanks me. Thanks me. No, he's actually thanking his Heavenly Father. He's thanking God. He's thanking his Father for the ability to do what he's about to do and for the seven loaves, the provision. Even when it looks like it's not enough, still thank God, hey? And watch what God does with the not quite enough. So he broke it and started giving them to his disciples to serve them. Like, I mean, broke it times thousands. Just keep ripping off bits of bread. Gave it to his disciples. They go sit down. And they served the people. And they also had a few small fish. And after that, he had blessed them, he ordered these to be served as well. And they ate and were satisfied. Not just enough to get home. They were full. That's what this word means. They were full. Couldn't eat anything more because there's leftovers. Baskets full. Picked up seven large baskets full of what was left over of the broken pieces. About 4,000 were there. And he sent them away. Let me come back to that. He sent them away. Crowd dismissed. Crowd blessed. Thank you for coming. Go back to your homes in Jesus' name. Immediately, he entered the boat with his disciples and came to the district of Dalmanutha. So he sends the crowd away, jumps into his boat, and goes to the other side of the lake. That's the context of this passage, but it's about what happens next that I want to look at. Amazing passage. We could preach on that all day. But let's look at what happens when he gets to the other side and he meets his other friends, the Pharisees. See, we've got the multitudes, the crowds, the hungry crowd, and then we've got the Pharisees. And throughout the Gospels, there's this constant pressure between the two. Now, the Pharisees came out, and the Pharisees are the traditionalists. They're the keepers of the law. They're the people who determine what's right and what's wrong about keeping the Jewish law. It just so happens that they've also created a whole lot of other laws that weren't really in the law, just to make sure. You know, so if it says keep the Sabbath holy, then that's a good thing. Don't work on the Sabbath. They created all these other kinds of laws so that you weren't even allowed to pick up a stick on the Saturday, on the Sabbath. You weren't allowed to do anything. And there were Sabbath police out there, I'm telling you, watching you like this. Ah, bastard, you picked up a stick. Ah, you've done that. You've cooked. Nope. Like, literally, this is what they were doing. Oh, you healed somebody. So we have the religious police out there making sure that their interpretation of the word of God was being kept fully. Now, Jesus didn't really appreciate that because he was God. If ever there was anyone who knew what the religious law was, well, it was actually Jesus. And you see in Jesus someone who's incredibly liberated, incredibly free, a higher law than the petty legalism that these guys had. And so they came out and began to argue with him, seeking from him a sign from heaven to test him. That's funny, isn't it? Like, here's God walking around on the planet. And here are the religious gatekeepers. If you're God, prove it. Jesus is very gracious, actually. He doesn't just smack them. They want a sign from heaven. They want to see Jesus do a trick, a party trick. They want to see something happen that's miraculous. Now, my question is, where were they yesterday on the other side of the lake? Where were they when Jesus was healing the sick, delivering people, teaching? Where were they? Why do they now come and find Jesus alone and look for a party trick? And sometimes you might have had those questions. You might have somebody come and say, well, if your God is real, then make me do a handstand on my nose or something. That'd be a nose stand. I don't know. You know, you had these conversations with people. You say, well, if your God is real, then let that light turn on without touching it. It's that kind of thing. They're trying to get a sense. I'm thinking, where were you, Pharisees? And what if you just happened to look around and see the miracles that are around you? Like the world is a miracle. It's beautiful. The planet that you're on is amazing. The fact that the sun rose this morning, that's incredible. And that you can expect it to rise tomorrow morning, a fraction later, a fraction colder. But it's gonna, you know, the fact that this world spins, the fact that you and I eat eggs. I was collecting eggs from my chickens. I was just pondering this egg, this little food parcel that's been wrapped by God's creation. Amazing. And all I do to my chickens is throw scraps at them and they produce eggs. Like, isn't that amazing? Just look around you, Pharisees, and you'll see the evidence of God, the beauty of creation, animals and plants. Look at a human being, the complexities, the mind and the emotions and the soul, the beauty of each person. Just look into somebody's eyes for a minute and see God's creation. It's all around us. Why would you want to prove that in some kind of party trick? Asking for a sign, Pharisee? And so Jesus sighs. He goes, sighs in his spirit. And he says, why does this generation seek for a sign? Why does this group of people, that word means, why does this kind of cohort of people look for some kind of party trick? Why? He says, truly I say to you, no sign will be given to this generation. No signs are given to people who come to God arrogantly. They'll stay arrogant. No signs are given to people who are too good for God. Who are the people that receive from God? They're the humble, they're the broken, they're the poor, they're the needy. And when they come before God, God listens to them. But the people who come before proud saying, thank God I'm not like that person, not James, like that imaginary person. Just in the wrong. God's not going to listen. Why aren't the Pharisees willing to go out and sit with the crowd? I looked up Matthew's version of this story, Matthew's account, and it says, large crowds came to him, bringing with them those who were lame, crippled, blind, mute, and many others, and they laid them down at his feet, and he healed them. This is what he was doing for 3 days. He was healing people, like the rejects of society, the people who didn't have it together, the people who kind of lost their way, the people who just physically, you know, had some ailment. These are the ones. Did they have a sign from God? Yeah, like the blind see, the deaf hear, the lame walk. They saw it. So where were the Pharisees? Why didn't they come and hang with this crowd, this perhaps riffraff, perhaps this crowd that was less than what they would want to be associated with? I think right there is the truth. Not willing to be in that kind of company. They missed so much of Jesus. I was puzzled and I looked up some commentators, you know, some Bible scholars on this, and one of them from an older other era, excuse the language, says this: whom the proud Pharisees looked upon with disdain, the humble Jesus looked upon with pity and tenderness. I'm not sure that the Pharisees will turn up on Tuesday night to see through care. I'm telling you, I have the greatest conversations with people that God made. And it's fantastic. So what does Jesus do? Look at the verse, start of verse 13. Two words here. Leaving them. See the difference between the way Jesus treats the crowd, the hungry crowd, and the Pharisees? What did Jesus say about the hungry crowd? He sent them away. He sent them. He blessed them. God bless you. Safe journey. Here's some food for the road. These ones literally turned his back on them. Had enough. It's not that Jesus doesn't love these guys. It's just that they're hard-hearted and they won't see. There's no feeding of the thousands. There's no miracles. There's no breakthrough. It tells me a lot about how we need to approach Jesus, right? God's response to the proud is ultimately he leaves. You don't need Jesus. He won't stick around eternally as well. And then we get to part three. My favorite. We've had the hungry crowd. We've had, what was the next one? Pharisees. And now we have the forgetful disciples. And they had forgotten to take bread. That's how it starts. They've forgotten to take bread. This is so funny. It's really funny. Like, they've just been in this most incredible miracle. Jesus has just fed 4,000 people with 7 loaves of bread. And it starts out, and they had forgotten to take bread and did not have more than 1 loaf in the boat with them. And they start to argue. Just look at verse 16. I'll come back to 15 in a sec. And they began to discuss with one another the fact that they had no bread. Now, that's a polite way of putting it. The original language talks about an argument. It talks about strong opinions. And it's like, who forgot it? All right, Peter, was that you? Peter, you're always forgetting stuff. Peter, so impetuous. John, was it your job to bring the bread? John, you always got your head in a book. It was vague, you know. Judas, was it you? Did you, you know, you're the money man. Did you spend it somewhere else and not? So this argument arises. And you can you just imagine Jesus right there? Like, there's 12 of them in the boat and Jesus. And you can just imagine Jesus. He's had this confrontation with the Pharisees. He's just done the miracle of 4,000. And his disciples are arguing about the fact that they don't have any bread. Jesus would just be going, what is going on? Say. Now in verse 15, I skipped it because it talks about what Jesus is thinking. And he was giving orders to them saying, watch out. Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. Now there's two things going on right here. It's funny because it's all about bread. So on one hand, he's talking about, you know, the leaven, like which is in bread, of course. The leaven is the stuff, the yeast that makes bread rise. And a little bit of yeast makes the whole bread rise. And if you ever made bread, you just put a little bit of yeast in. And it doesn't just infect that little bit where it finds, you know. You don't just have a little raised bit of bread and the rest of it's flat. No, it infects the whole loaf of bread. And Jesus is telling them, he says, watch out for that attitude. Watch out for the way the Pharisees treat each other. Watch out for their arguments and pride and arrogance. He says, don't let that infect you because a little bit of that will make you really sick. Just stay away from that. That's why he left them. He says, I'm not going to let that touch me. He walked away with his disciples. But the disciples are thinking that he's talking about bread. You see? The play on words. And they began to discuss with each other. Now, I am a tad forgetful at times. I didn't used to be, but then, I don't know, got married and 4 kids, started pastoring a church. And sometimes I'm just not always with it. And I remember at President's Conference, I had my bag, this bag, which I still have. Thanks to Beth, actually. So I had that under my seat, and I'm walking away. I think, oh, this is good. And Beth calls out, Jeff, are you missing something? No, I'm fine. And then she holds up the bag and we have a bit of a chuckle. Now, what if Beth, in her self-righteousness, you're always forgetting things? She'd never say that. Can you imagine that? What a loser. Like, why don't you just get it together, Lloyd? You know, you're always leaving things behind and forgetting things. That's the spirit of the Pharisees right there. What I love what Jesus does, I'll move that so I don't trip on it. Jesus is completely the opposite. And that's part 4. It's what happens next. Jesus is aware of the discussion, right? He's looking at it going, what haven't I taught them? And he said to them, why do you discuss the fact that you have no bread? Why are you discussing it? What is the point? Haven't you just seen me? And we ask the same question, don't we? We think, does Jesus know my needs? Does he know my needs for clothing, for food and for shelter and for friendship and for a job and the things that we need, the stuff of life? And Jesus is saying to us sometimes, why are you even thinking that? Why are you discussing the fact that I don't have this or that or that? I am right here. He says, do you not yet see or understand? Do you have a hardened heart? Having eyes, do you not see? Having ears, do you not hear? And do you not remember? He's having a go at them. Not because they're forgetful of the bread, but because they're forgetful of the real bread himself. They've forgotten who's in the boat with them. That's why he's having a shot at them. Not because of their humanness, because they forget who's with them. He says, he's kind of chastising a little. Do you not remember when I broke five loaves for the 5,000? How many baskets full of broken pieces you picked up? I said to him, 12. And when I broke the seven for the 4,000, how many large baskets full of broken pieces did you pick up? I said to him, 7. And he was saying to them, do you not yet understand? Don't you get it? I am your provider. I am the one who walks with you. I am the one. How is it you don't understand, as Matthew's version says, that I do not speak to you concerning bread? Yeah, I see Jesus saying in summary that it's okay. It's okay that you've forgotten bread. It's okay that you're human. It's okay. I understand that you're made from dust. I understand that you're dealing with complex situations. I understand that you have needs. I understand that sometimes you don't have it all together. And I reckon Jesus is saying in this, says, I would rather that you forget bread than to get so proud that you don't need the bread of life. So I'd rather you go that path than have the yeast of the Pharisees in you. I reckon he's saying, let me help you. Sure, you made a mistake, but I am going to extend grace. I have every right to get annoyed because you're so forgetful, but that's just not the point. Because I've given thanks to my Father for bread. Therefore, it gives me the power and the ability and the heart to extend grace across. Because I am grateful for what my Father's given me. Therefore, I'm going to bless that way. He says, I'll sort your bread problem, even if it's your fault. That's grace. I'll step in. Even if you're the one that's made the mistake, it's okay. I'll still cross over. I'm not going to hold my arms and not do anything because you're forgetful, because you're human. He says, never forget my abundant provision. In fact, why don't you lean on it some more? Why don't you trust me some more? Why don't you go camping with that bread one day and see what happens? Why don't you go to the wilderness with 4,000 people and take Jesus with you? Oh, yeah. Who forgot the bread at camping last? And he was very gracious. Anyway, we'll chat afterwards. We'll take that offline, as they say in meetings. Oh, now I've lost my point. Oh, I think I was a Pharisee at that moment. Oh, you mean no toast? The camping? See, this is how we're to treat other people, isn't it? Like, gratitude up leads to grace across. Extending grace. It's having that great sense of God, how grateful we are that we can treat others the same way that he treats us. If we perceive God as harsh and judgmental and kind of frowning on us, how are we going to treat other people? Same thing. And that's why even Christian churches, not just other religions, sometimes we get it all wrong and we're heavy-handed with people. There is room for correction and all that, I'm sure. But it's the attitude. If we ever have that position that I'm better than you, we've lost something. Somewhere along the way, we're not having the grace of God in our lives for other people. Even when it's our fault. Even when it's somebody else's fault. Resist being so right that you fail to care. Resist, I told you so. And dismiss people rather than say, yeah, okay, you got it wrong, but let me help you. That's grace. It's grace because that's how God treats me. That's how Jesus, how many times have I forgotten things? How many times have I been in that boat and not being aware of his provision? and then started to argue with my friends about who didn't do what. Jesus goes, I'm with you. I'll sort it. Since when did it matter so much that we are right? It doesn't win arguments. As soon as you find yourself arguing with somebody, just really? What are we trying to prove there? But by contrast, religious people, they're not grateful people. They've failed to remember what God has done for them. They've failed to realize how much grace there is for them. It's all around self-effort of what I can do and what I have done to elevate myself to get to this position. Therefore, the way out for other people is hard work, steps and ladders. I don't know, but Jesus extends a hand. Not about self-effort. It's about grace. Religiosity is not grateful. It leads to legalism, not grace. Grace opens the door for other people. Legalism shuts it. Grace extends a hand. Legalism makes people do it themselves. Oh, I see a church of extreme gratitude and extreme grace. It excites me more than anything. You know? I love our church in so many ways. I love the friendliness and the hospitality. And we've got to work hard at that still, hey. We've got to just keep making sure that people are cared for and welcomed and talked to, you know, always. I love our church's passion for prayer and the prayer walks in the mornings and the things that we do, you know, the night to night and Holy Spirit times. I love that we take the word seriously and we look at the Bible and, you know, read it each day. And I love all that, but you know what I love the most? Is a church full of grace. A church where people feel like they can receive Jesus without being judged or condemned. And in that journey, absolutely we change and sure we grow and we shake off the stuff and the things that harm us, but it's a journey of grace. It's what I love most about our church, and that's why I want to see this multiplied and grown. And you know, in other places like Lithgow, I want to see churches rise right across our region, which extend grace to a community, not in harshness or this is what you must do, but in, hey, God really loves you. He really cares for you. He's really got a plan and a purpose for your life. Come on a journey of discovery of your Creator and let Him change you. Let Him revive you and restore you and then release you to help other people along the journey. That's why I love our church. That's why wake up early on Sunday mornings and get excited about it. That's why I give to it. That's why I sacrifice lots. It's all worth it because people's lives start to change and contagiously we grab this idea together that we can be a community of grace for a world that is harsh, from social media that's harsh, isn't it? You get on the wrong side of Facebook or Instagram or Twitter and you'll experience the backhand of it. But not the church. That the church is full of life and grace and love. We can change the culture of our city. We can start to influence it because yeast works. It does. It works both ways. The yeast of the Pharisees work. Gosh, that's a little legal. But just imagine you people, imagine your workplace, your yeast. You're the grace yeast in your workplace, in your school, in your street. You're the one who extends grace. You're the one who doesn't pay back evil for evil, but extends grace. You're the one that welcomes and loves and receives. See, you're yeast, and somebody goes, wow, I wish I was more like Bev. I wish there was thousands of people like you in this city. Imagine that. Imagine the passion for God in this city. Imagine the grace and hospitality and the muffins that would be eaten. I don't know I'm going on, but I get excited about the future of our church. As long as we hold on to grace, as long as we remember the gratitude that is owed up and then the grace that extends out.
Thanks for listening. We would love to connect with you. Our services are on Sundays at 217 Howick Street at 10 a.m. for a 10:30 service. Or visit us on the web at c3churchbathurst.org. Come like a river, come like a flood. Let us be overwhelmed, baptized in your love.